Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello everyone and welcome to the latest episode of the Red Men Weekly podcast. Hope you're all doing well. Yes, this is the show where we bring you some of the best clips from our amazing Red Men Plus content from the previous week. I say it every single time just to let you guys know the clips you're about to hear. The full shows are available both in video and in podcast form over at redmenplus.com. You can watch them on your screens, you can download them into your native podcast apps, whether that be Apple or Podcast Addict or whatever, and you can get them there as well. If you're a Spotify user and you absolutely just love Spotify, if you go over to there and search for Red Men Plus Podcast, you can sign up on there as well. They will charge you on there, you won't be signing up through us, it's a separate thing, but yeah, if you just love Spotify, you can get audio versions as well. You can sign up just through there. You won't get the videos and you won't get access to the website, but you still get the great content in audio form. Right then, let's make a start. The first show of the week was the biased football podcast. Yeah, the world is going mad in terms of football transfers, predominantly down to the Saudi Pro League. So yeah, it was me, Paul and Dan Club having a big old chat about Kylian Mbappe.
Fabrizio Romano tweeted...
He does that a lot.
A lot.
He's a big fan.
Don't like him, the old tweet.
Monday morning.
Do you mean X?
Yeah.
X. Well, thing is, it says X, but it also says tweet next to it. Okay. And then it says new to Twitter on the right-hand side because we're not logged in on this page. So, he tweeted... Exclusive, Al Hilal have submitted formal bid to Paris Saint-Germain in order to open talks for Kylian Mbappe. Understand it's worth €300 million, a record fee. No talks on the player side. PSG remain convinced that Mbappe already agreed terms with Madrid with contract already. Now, we've spent quite a lot of time in the last few weeks when we're doing the Saudi Watch section about how they are the perfect example of how transfers are really done arse about tit by how you perceive them to be. Whereas this is how we transfers. This is the football manager approach to transfers, sort of. Can I ask a question, Steve?
Hi.
Why the fuck are they paying €300 million for Kylian Mbappe?
Because he's the best player in the world. And if you're going to sport wash, this is we've seen aging players go to end their careers and cash in. Mm-hmm. And that's what everyone kind of sees Cristiano Ronaldo doing. Everyone sees Kareem Benzema doing that, on a much lower level. Like, but Jordan Henderson doing the same thing. He's going to end his career by getting weighed in with money. Mm-hmm. And then you've seen average to, decent level players, but like your Ruben Neveses and Alan Saint-Maximin. Like, good players, but they're not superstars, are they? They're just good footballers. For them to go and get the best player, I think, in the world at the moment, get him to Saudi Arabia, and he's not aging. He's in his prime. Mm-hmm. He is an absolute, he's the superstar of superstars. That's why they're doing it. And that's probably worth to the PIF and to Saudi Arabia. That's worth $300 million. Even if it is only for, just talk that it could be for a year.
Well, this is...
But he's probably worth it. He probably draws £300 million worth of eyes on your league because he's fucking Kylian Mbappe.
Well, let me just do the follow-up tweet because this comes from James Benj, which I'm more sceptical of, if I'm honest. Al Hilal offering £300 million transfer fee to PSG. In addition to this, they're prepared to offer Mbappe a salary package of €700 million over 1 year.
That helps as well, yeah. That'll change your mind, won't it?
Mm-hmm. After which you'll be free to depart for Real Madrid should he so wish. So effectively, they're paying £1 billion for one season of Kylian Mbappe in the Saudi Pro League, is what they're doing. But my question, you haven't answered the question. I don't know. I don't expect you to have the answer. But he's got 1 year left on his contract.
Yeah.
3 days ago, the latest was they're going to be prepared to accept less than 180 million euros they paid for him, because they've got no choice now. They'll either let him rot or they're going to sell him. That was going to happen. So I asked the question, Dan, maybe you've got an answer.
I have got the answer, but I have got an answer. Apologies. Is that, well, they're just blowing Real Madrid out the water, because he'd just go to Real Madrid. They want him in their league.
Okay.
They want him there. Money's no object. Money's nothing. It's when you're that rich, it's nothing. Who cares? It's just whatever. It's couch money, isn't it? So that's all they're doing. They want Kylian Mbappe in their league, get eyes on their league for the entire season. Mm. If he goes to Real Madrid afterwards, then they're not bothered.
Yeah.
They get a year of him. And if it was a normal fee of £150 million, which in itself is a mad thing to say, he'd just go to Real Madrid. Now he can go there. PSG are going, well, why would we accept Real Madrid's offer if Real Madrid want you, they can pay the £300 million. Mm. It sorts everybody out. PSG are desperate for him to go. I think that's obvious because they know he's going to Real Madrid. He's nodded and winked, and they're losing the best player in the world, in my opinion, for nothing in a year's time. They obviously, of course, want to get cash. They want to cash in. They'll win their league pretty much anyway. So it's irrelevant. Obviously, they want the Champions League, but they haven't really been close to that for a couple of years now, obviously since they got to the final. So I think it actually sorts everybody out. Everybody wins here. Kylian Mbappe goes and gets absolutely stupid money for a year where he puts no strain on himself, really. Then he gets his move to Real Madrid. PSG get the money they want. The Saudis get the best player on the planet into their sports washing enterprise. Mm. Who loses? I'll tell you who loses. Like, the valuation of footballers is bananas. But like, I can see every single person going, you know what? For a year, we're signed with this, because, like I say, they don't care about £1 billion.
Well,
they just don't care.
Last week about like how bidding for Diaz represents sea change. I think I think everything's gone perfectly for them in terms of bidding for these end of their career type stars. We're going to raise the profile, and it feels like this has gone better than we could have anticipated. Let's start bidding for the next tier, which is prime age but fringe players. So we've already bought aging fringe players. Now we're going to buy prime age fringe players and see how you get on. But this, Dan, is just, I mean, this is a publicity stunt, effectively.
Yeah. No, it is, and it's a major one at that as well. It's unprecedented, really, the sort of figures we are talking about, of course. And Steve's right in the point, it is them trying to sort of get more eyes in their league. I'm actually surprised. I mean, there's a lot of different matters at play here, but obviously PSG are owned by Qatar, and this is Saudi Arabia. I was actually surprised to even entertain that sort of thing, because we know what the relationship's like between those two nations over there. So that's one element of it. And also, the point about only staying for a year, the Real Madrid have to pay a huge fee to get him out of there is another question, because I'm not sure they'd be entirely willing to do that. And also, I think Mbappe only gets his tax-free money if he stays for 2 years. You have to work there for 2 years before.
I'm sure he'll be signed.
I don't think that's going to matter to him, no, of course not. But yeah, it's a huge, huge play from Saudi Arabia. It's absolutely astronomical.
It's the biggest play.
It felt as though we were sort of worryingly on the cusp of maybe a play for Salah, because you mentioned the Diaz one there, and that does feel like sort of one or two steps down from them going, okay, let's push the button on Salah now. If this happens, like it looks like it could do, what's to stop them doing anything else? Nothing at a limit.
My worry, and you mentioned Mo Salah there, is that PSG might come in for him.
That's my
worry on this, is that they're going to have £300 million burning in their back pocket, and neither of a forward they can get. Now, I don't think Liverpool would sell at this stage, and I'm not completely sure Mohamed Salah would go now, but I wouldn't be shocked if they get that money in their bank account, if they come knock off of Mohamed Salah. He's, by all accounts, he'd have been offered Saudi. Of course, he will have. Every player on the planet will have taken the phone call of someone from Saudi Arabia checking their interest. So I understand it, but like, that's what's going to happen here. This is what happened, and funny enough, it was PSG who started this last time. We kind of, with the Neymar deal, is that they transformed football. That Neymar deal leads to Liverpool getting £150 million for Coutinho and the knock-on effect. This is the same thing, just grander. And if it is this one-year deal, because I would be shocked if Mbappe went and signed a 3-4 year contract there. Mm-hmm. But if he knows he's going to Real Madrid anyway, and everyone's happy
and
with
it's just the difference between him sat on PSG's bench for a year, wasting his totally wasting his talents.
Yeah, and also like just the messiness of it. He doesn't need that. Mbappe, he's a brand now, isn't he? He's like, you know, all his deals and stuff. Like, he doesn't need the hassle of a team. He doesn't want him and arguing with the board, and they're trying to get rid of it. It doesn't sit well. He can go there, play a year, get his dream moves.
What I think it does on the Salah thing is I hadn't considered the potential knock-on impact because, you know, that PSG, you're right, will want something. Mm. I mean, the thing is, they've still got Neymar, so it's not like the...
But they've lost Messi and Mbappe.
Yeah.
There's a status thing.
But it depends what they're looking to do moving forward, because what they discovered last year is they actually need a squad. If they actually want to be able to play in the Champions League, they actually need a handful of other good players underneath that first veneer of quality. But I think what it does in terms of the Salah stuff is it moves it on for next year. So if you've got Mbappe for a year, you're effectively saying the best player in the world can come and play in this league and this is the money he's going to earn to do it. That's our crown jewel in this enterprise. And Mbappe's going to go, okay, well, I'll do it as a stopgap waiting for Real Madrid to come to take me. But next summer, it's like, well, he's gone. How do we fill that? Mm. And that's when you turn around to Salah and go, right, you're now, here's the crown jewel. We'll give you a crown and everything. You know, here's a crown and a scepter. Yeah. You're now the king of the Saudi Pro League. Here's that. But that amount of money is just... Are you right? It is. It smacks of... PSG, Neymar stuff, it's paying release clauses when you're not meant to. It's blowing everyone else out the water. It's totally fucking the ecosystem of the football transfer market. I mean, what we've not touched upon is, because it's Liverpool related more, I think this closes the door on us getting any chance of getting too many, because the only remaining chance that Liverpool were going to get in was Real Madrid were needing desperately to raise cash. All of a sudden, it's back to last summer, where you keep them because you don't need the money, because you can't raise the money you're going to raise from that's not going to get you anyone worth having.
At this time, though, it's worth it, and we're recording this, things can change quickly, and we know that. But, like, by all accounts, like, for Richard, like, there's nothing from Mbappe, yeah. Mm-hmm. You might just want to go there. You might just say, listen, I want to go to Real Madrid. So I either stay here on your bench and you're paying me to not play, or you sell me to Real Madrid. He chooses where he goes, so that is there too. But, yeah, I mean, you would think, and I might be wrong, but you would guess that there's been, you wouldn't just. Would you just bid without having even approached his agent?
Usually
there's a nod in the wink that they want him, but as a PR stunt, you might just go, you know what, fuck it, let's just throw the bid in and cause it's absolute chaos. And then just see how everything falls. It's staggering, really.
It's opportunism, isn't it? You know, it's going, can we? I think there's been a lot of that. It's like, try for him. Go and see what happens. Just have an experiment and see what that kind of thing looks like. It's very rare that any of us kind of get that situation in life where you get a free hit to go and experiment with a bunch of stuff and see what sticks.
Yeah.
And they've got that's the why you have money. When you've got that kind of money, you can afford to fail quickly and crack on with it. You know, that if that fails, whatever. It's actually also, it's kind of shown their might. It's said with a couple of those recent things where it's an hour over transfer fees, and we've seen a couple of deals break down in the last few weeks. Not necessarily all from PIF clubs, obviously. The Etifak stuff with Henderson kind of got dragged the whole enterprise through the mud a little bit for it. But if it's saying, we've got this pot of money here, just give you a demonstration of our power. It's like blowing up Alderaan with the Death Star, isn't it? Like, I mean, it's not really the plan. We're just going to show the world, the sort of the galaxy, what it is we can potentially be doing. I don't think you can. I don't think the PIF teams can lose even just by having this be out.
No, not
world.
At all. Like you said, that they've probably seen the situation, and obviously didn't go to Japan, did he, with the PSG? He's training back in Paris, and they've probably seen that and go, yeah, let's just show the world what we're all about. Like you say, I think you mentioned earlier that no one really loses in this. I actually think football loses a little bit in all of this because he is the best player in the world, as you rightly say, and he's going to go and play in what will remain for this season, necessarily, maybe not moving forward, but will remain a pretty poor standard of football.
Right then, next up, it is Redmen Reacts. Yeah, Jordan Henderson himself announced the news on his social media. He's leaving Liverpool to go and play in the Saudi Pro League as well. And we had our very own Mr. Chris Pajak joined by Mr. Dan Club to react to that very news.
Where does it leave us right now in terms of the midfield?
Well, it leaves us, in a little bit of a sticky situation, to be honest with you, because we all accounted for the initial departures in terms of obviously Milner, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Naby Keita, and, you know, Aubameyang, if he's even worth mentioning. We all sort of accounted for that and could sort of plan our route ahead. And we sat here 2-3 weeks ago, whatever it was now, with McAllister and Szoboszlai already through the door. The Lavia stuff was sort of bubbling under. We could see the sense. We could see where we were heading. like people were starting to already sort of do the squad depth chart, and it was looking quite promising. Now all of a sudden, you lose two more senior midfielders from those you thought you were going to have for the season, and it changes the landscape entirely. It changes what you want to do moving forwards. It changes the options that you thought you had. It changes everything about it. So I think we've got to be really smart, and I've spoken about this a few times. Liverpool, a proactive Liverpool in the transfer market, generally speaking, not always, are quite a good Liverpool. Mm-hmm. Like, we get things right, and I know it's different this time because Julian Ward's obviously left his post and Jörg Schmadtke's come in. Jörg Schmadtke, by the way, has come into an absolute, like, what's going on around him? He must be thinking, this is always like this. It's chaos. Like, I know we spoke this week, actually, just on a side topic again, about his deal, and he says it's an annual deal, which means it runs, I think, it's next May. But they've got an agreement in place whereby they'll speak in August and sort of see if they want to move on ahead of that. I wonder how that conversation is going to go.
I don't
think
he's going to have any time in August.
Maybe not. He might
not
be
even
busy,
just
man.
Slip a 30-minute meeting in, to
yeah,
be honest with you.
He could be a busy old man, yeah. So he might have to take that out the calendar. But yeah, I think, listen, like I say, it changes entirely our route moving forwards. It scuppers all our plans. All those best laid plans are just done now. I don't know if we need a Henderson replacement as such, because we already had sort of made peace with the fact he's wrong.
Do we need a Milner replacement, Dan?
Yeah, possibly. I don't think that exists. I don't think that person exists, quite frankly. In terms of leadership, perhaps, but not in terms of football. I don't know where you find the replacement for James Milner that stroke Jordan Henderson. Those two were tailor-made for the roles they did play and were going to play, in my opinion. That sort of jack-of-all-trades, can drop into a game, see it out sort of thing, that type of footballer. You can't buy that.
The mad thing is, and I keep coming back, it's all circumstantial, of course, and it's all about timing. But if the Fabinho come in bid first, Henderson wouldn't be leaving the football club.
No.
And that is the mad thing, because Fabinho, and it would have just instantly added 900 minutes to Jordan, and he'd have been happy heading into the Euros. That's the weird thing. And again, if someone had bid 3 months ago for Jordan Henderson and maybe for Fabinho, you have more time. Milner might not have left, which is the mad thing. Yeah. And like, I'm not saying that these are the answers, because you want to improve, and you can improve on Jordan Henderson and you can improve on Fabinho. It's, can you improve when you're being reactive? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where you were sort of leading to then, rather than proactive, planning ahead 3-4 months. These are the guys that we want. This is going to happen. They're going to go. Mm-hmm. Now you've been planning all 6 months, maybe more, of who guys are for the eights. You've been thinking Fabinho's going to be the base and Henderson's going to cover wherever needs covering. That's difficult to plan for, is what you're saying.
Yeah, 100% it is. Like I say, that's when your plans get thrown into disarray, when something like this happens, completely unexpected. Two Saudi clubs. I mean, the Saudi situation has changed the football transfer landscape entirely, let alone just for Liverpool. So, but yeah, I think it is difficult. But one thing we do have in our favour amongst all of this is the fact that for about 12 months, maybe more, we've known we need a midfield rebuild. It's been coming for some time now. Obviously, Tchouaméni stuff last summer, then there's the Bellingham plan.
Well, the fact that Lavia was on the radar, Dan, exactly, suggests that they knew that Fino was coming to the end.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I think, like I say, the one thing we have going forward is that we have a pretty sort of substantial list of potential midfield targets. So now that we suddenly need two more, per se, one more possibly, depending on who it is, it shouldn't be too difficult for us to... The groundwork should be done on a lot of these players. Ryan Gravenberch has been mentioned, for example. We've known about Ryan Gravenberch for a long time now, before we signed for Bayern Munich. Yes. We liked him a lot. We wanted him. So the background, the work, possibly even as far as the agent contacts for some of these players, will be done. That groundwork will be there. We can sort of pull that drawer out of the file and go, oh yeah, we looked at this lad 8 months ago. We really like him because of X, Y, Z. Suddenly...
Update his file, please.
Yeah, but suddenly the mould that he didn't fit then, which is why we didn't go and do it, or it was because we were waiting for Bellingham stroke Tchouaméni. Suddenly that isn't a situation anymore because they've got their clubs. Suddenly the mould that he now does fit, because, you know, Henderson's left, Fabinho could leave, whatever way, shape or form, suddenly that makes more sense. Yeah. And you go and pull the trigger on that.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I still see this as an opportunity. It's one that I probably wouldn't have chosen to follow 2 weeks ago, but I do still believe Liverpool can bet better out of losing Fabinho and losing Jordan Henderson. And, you know, the leadership is going to be difficult when you've lost James Milner. Of course it is, but there are leaders chock through this squad. There are tons of them. So let's talk about it. If the players voted Virgil van Dijk as the vice-captain, it kind of stands to reason that Virgil van Dijk will be the captain.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And obviously, he captained on Wednesday night. He captained the first half, led the team out there. And it's an interesting one. I've been sort of changing my mind daily on this, to be honest with you, because the captaincy side of things, I wanted Jordan Henderson to continue as Liverpool captain. Make no two bones about that. I did. I thought he was the right man to sort of, alongside Klopp, etc., to oversee this huge rebuild, this new dawn of Liverpool, if you like, for at least another season. So when he left on the back of James Milner leaving, I was a bit like, oh, that stings. Like, I didn't like that. I didn't want that to be the case. But now, given, you know, you've seen how the players have reacted to Virgil van Dijk with the captaincy in midweek, Soboslai and stuff like that, sort of really complimenting him and things. So
we had the little C.
Exactly, yeah. On his Instagram, that is silly stuff, but that sort of stuff makes you think, okay, well, they clearly have every faith in him. And I wonder, and it only really dawned on me, I think, of yesterday, I wonder, now Virgil van Dijk, rightly or wrongly, is coming for some criticism in his own performances last season, and they probably were below par, given how high his par was. I wonder if a captaincy might take him up a couple of levels again. Might get the best out of him. And I don't, it's clearly not the long-term solution because he's, you know, into his 30s himself. You have to sort of already have one eye on the future with this. Now, whether that's Andy Robertson or whether that's Trent, for me, it's probably Trent.
Yeah,
I think you can sort of share the responsibility between Robbo and Virgil, captain of Scotland, captain of Holland, of course, perfect. You can share the responsibility between those two, all whilst blooding a Trent, possibly a Canate. He's been speaking recently about upping his own game and getting more involved.
Well, this is what all players have to do at some point during their career. If you've got any ambitions to become a captain or a leader of men in a dressing room, there is a time and a place where you have to take... There is a time... Trent's the really interesting one for me. Let's talk about the vice-captaincy then. I think there's four options. There's right now, there's Robbo, there's Trent, there's Salah, and there's Alisson. Mm-hmm. I would have down as the four options for potential captains. There is a point where Trent Alexander-Arnold, 19-year-old, a young kid on the block, 21-year-old, 22-years-old, he's pretty much won everything you can win. At 24-years-old, his role's changed. He's becoming a midfielder. The team are naturally looking to him as a leader in terms of with the ball. Mm-hmm. They want the... We've spoken about this over the course of the last sort of 12 weeks, really, how everyone looks towards Trent Alexander-Arnold and passes the ball to him when he's in the middle of the park. There is a point where you naturally have to up that and become a leader yourself. This could be the perfect moment for Trent to become a vice-captain, have a couple of years, maybe 3-4 years under Virgil van Dijk, take it on when you're of an age good enough. Or it could be one where Virgil takes it for a year or two and Trent becomes the captain while Virgil's still at the football club. Mm. We've seen that happen at times during...
Sammy Hippier and Gerrard.
Yeah, exactly. The other one is Salah. Doesn't strike me as a captain, and too similar a type of captain to Virgil for me.
Mm.
Robbo would be the... If Trent wasn't in the wings, Robbo's the Carragher to Virgil's Gerrard. And I feel like that might be the best short-term solution. And Alisson sees the old pitch, and he's going to be here, and he's the best in the world. Which one are you sort of going with?
I'm siding with Virgil as your captain and Robbo's his vice all day long. Personally, I've got something objectively against attackers being captains. Okay. Full stop. I'm
fine with that, apart from Alan Shearer. But
Generally speaking, I
think it was a terrible captaincy, but he had to be, was at Newcastle.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and there's always the exception that goes against the rule, of course. But yeah, listen, Salah, he's captain of Egypt, and that's the thing always, but he's the best player for Egypt by a country mile, which probably explains some of that. And he leads by example, and he'll continue to lead by example. What you have to do with Salah...
Literally Egypt's country mile.
Yeah, nice. You have to be careful with these situations, I always think, because I've been involved in myself in sport, when you're naming captains or vice-captains after someone leaves, or whatever it is, you have to be really careful because you don't upset anyone, basically. So what you've got to do with your Alissons and your Salahs this world is make sure they are fully well aware of the situation. So you're going ahead with so-and-so as captain, but they are...
You're in the leadership group.
Massively part of the leadership group. And the same could be said for Trent, because Trent could be thinking himself, well, half a chance here. Henderson's gone. I could be vice here comfortably. I could even be captain, maybe not just yet, but there will be in the back of his mind, he'd be thinking that, because why not? Why wouldn't you? You'd be disappointed if he wasn't. So you've got to, with all five of them, you've got to make sure they're fully aware of the plan, and they are well immersed in the leadership group. And Liverpool made a big thing about the leadership group since Klopp's been at the club. So I think that...
There's always player voted as well.
But that's massively important. And I don't see a reason why the players wouldn't vote for these names that we're talking about. They feel like the most sensible names to me. They've been the ones who've either been in it anyway or been around it. And I think you make the point, Alisson, he'll lead by example. He sees the whole pitch. He's a very calm, cool and collected guy, generally speaking. I think having different types of leaders is really, really important. And I think Trent, what Trent brings to the party, as well as his ridiculous ability, is the fact that He's a Liverpool lad, isn't he? You know what I mean? It makes perfect sense. So yeah, I think it's a good group.
Cheers to Dan and cheers to Chris. Yeah, be honest now. Going to let you guys know it's a very heavy Dan club show. This Dan has been working as hard as ever. I'm sure you'll be absolutely delighted to hear from Dan as much as you're going to do. Because up next, it is Dan Club with Transfer Insight with Jacob Tanswell. Jacob spent last year covering Southampton for The Athletic. So he has seen plenty of Romeo Lavia being linked with Liverpool Football Club, of course. So yeah, here is Dan chatting with Jacob.
I want to talk about him as a player now a little bit more. You mentioned sort of how impressive he was in the early days just there. But going further back than that, obviously, you know, came through the Anderlecht Academy, went to Man City and clearly impressed there before moving on as well. From a piece for The Athletic, you spoke to Gene Kinderman, is that right, from the Anderlecht Academy. Now, I suppose you can sort of elaborate on his development, if you like, and just how much did he wax lyrical about Lavi and what he was like as a youngster and stuff?
Essentially, Gene said that he could not read Romeo Lavia as a character. He said he never knew what he was thinking, but he's a very quiet character, but he could speak multiple languages. He was one of the most popular in the dressing room and growth coming through the age groups at Anderlecht. And what he said was that, you know, he thought typically he would sign that contract when he turns to 17 or turns to 18. Like everyone should, you know, Anderlecht's a brilliant academy, brilliant club. He'd have a pathway. So he actually invited Roberto Martinez to talk to Lavia to convince him to sign for Anderlecht. And that even didn't do the trick because I think Lavia is a guy in a hurry. He saw Pep Guardiola liked him playing in the Kevin De Bruyne Cup a few years back before that. Vincent Kompany and Craig Bellamy talked to Pep Guardiola and said, listen, this guy's a serious player. You have to sign him. And he went over just before COVID. And I think Gene Kinderman's and a lot of Anderlecht staff thought he'd struggle. But I think he loves the challenge and he loves living on his own as well. He's very single-minded and he managed to thrive there. And when he didn't get game time at Man City, he thought, okay, what's the next step? And I think that's what he's thinking now as well. So yeah, that story about Pep Guardiola going over to see him when he was invited by De Bruyne to see him in a tournament. Yeah, it's a sliding doors moment, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely it is. Yeah, and it's fascinating that the people we're talking about, like they're genuine bona fide sort of names in the game, and they're waxing lyrical, talking so admirably about this player. There's clearly a serious talent there. Obviously, schooled at Man City thereafter. In terms of his playing style, can you tell? Like, is that the type of player he is? Obviously, Pep Guardiola's very ball playing, you know, keep possession orientated. You mentioned earlier that he style didn't really suit what Southampton were about. Can you tell that Lavia's a sort of a level above that in many ways?
Yes, Southampton couldn't keep hold of the ball, and it was just a bit ping pong in midfield. Where if you know, at Anderlecht and Man City, he was essentially cut in the character of Rodri, really. And it's just a shame that Rodri was standing in his way, because at any other club, he'd probably be their number six right now. It's interesting because in the Belgian youth national teams, they sometimes use him as a centre back and as a number. Right. They thought obviously his athleticism, he had good pace. But I think Guardiola and especially Southampton as well see him as that number six in a 4-3-3, someone who could get the ball for the goalkeeper, turn and play forward. And I said a few weeks back before the interest of Saudi Arabia in Fabinho that I thought he'd probably take his position. And the fact that obviously Fabinho might be leaving now, always leaving, that's probably where Jurgen Klopp or Arteta or any of those top six clubs will see him in that number six role.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's where I certainly have shoehorned him, earmarked him into that six. And just on that, because I wanted to ask then, he's clearly very young still. He's 19, you know, he's had one good season in terms of his own personal performances behind him in the Premier League. Do you think he's ready to sort of step into those boots? Because as much as Fabinho was miles off it last season, you know, we're not too far removed from having a conversation about him being one of the best in that position in the world. So I think personally, I kind of thought Lavia comes in when Fabinho wasn't going anywhere and sort of learns, continues to develop, acts as a bit of an understudy. Now Fabinho goes. Do you think Lavia is ready to come in and be the frontline choice in that role?
I do. I don't want to sell him too much to Liverpool.
Go for it.
I think he is. The only issue is that he had that one full season and there were times where he would break down physically. So he had a big hamstring issue. And then he came back in February time. And he'd sometimes struggle to complete games. You see him often going down in games with cramp, with, you know, hamstring niggles. So if he was going to play, hopefully, what if Liverpool see it, 60 games in the season or whatever, or 55, I think that could be a challenge for him, especially being at the first team. So you probably have to share that with someone. He might have to play 65% of the games and then just share it and be like that, because he's only young, he's still growing, he's still physically developing, and I'm sure Klopp would probably want to test him to his limits physically as well, something he's probably not had at Southampton as much. So he's obviously only in his second year, but I think in terms of technical quality and tactical understanding, yeah, he's more than ready to go right into that level of midfield.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Like you said, the demands on a midfielder in this Liverpool system, we've seen numerous ones, and some of the more durable ones actually not cope with it, you know. So it can be quite testing, and it'd be interesting to see whether Lavia, I suppose, whether he can do it week in, week out. We've got Europa League football as well to contend with Thursday, Sunday, potentially. And the problem is, from a Liverpool perspective, is that his rotational option, if it does happen like we think it looks like it might now, his rotational option will be Pacetic, who's similar age, like two young, very young lads there to sort of share the burden. So interesting to see how it pans out. In terms of his ceiling then, you've seen a lot of him. You clearly feel like he's a very, very talented individual. In terms of his ceiling, sort of what are we talking about? How far do you expect this young lad to go?
I've spoken to a few Southampton supporters and people at the club, and they say they haven't seen a player like him since Gareth Bale at the club and when he broke through. I think he's probably going to be at one of those elite clubs. Of course, you've got to preach caution at times, but I think if he was that good in the Southampton team, which was that bad, I can only imagine, you know, how good he and how high a ceiling will be when everything suits him and he's not having to do as much work as he was at that Southampton team. A lot of the time it was him and James Ward-Prowse just running after everything and everyone else going anywhere they want. So I think he'll be even better at a more functional club. And yeah, I think he can for sure play in that top four and challenge for those top honours. I do think that, and I think he's been earmarked to do that since he was a kid, really. The fact that Southampton have managed to get him for a year and hire him for a year, rent him out for a year, was, I think, it's going to be a privilege for them, and they'll look back on that in a few years' time as a real coup.
Cheers to Jacob, cheers to Dan for that one. Yet more Dan Club time. It's Arno van den Abeel with Dan. Now, Arno used to coach Lavia at the Belgian youth side. He also coached them at Anderlecht as well. He knows a lot about Lavia and his development, the type of player he is, the type of character he is. So Dan got on the phone with Arno, and here's what he had to say.
The game you coached him for the under-15 Belgium team was against Switzerland, is that right? And he played as a right-back in that game. He's obviously moved on to be a midfielder now, and he actually scored in the game as well. Belgium won 2-0. What was he always a right-back when he was younger? Was that the position he played? Did he always play there?
But I don't know where you got that information, but he didn't play as a right-back.
Okay.
He played as a right-centre-back. I played him as a right-centre-back, so we played in a back four. And he was the right center back because at that time he played in Anderlecht already in the under 16 group, and he was playing alternating. He was playing in the back, in a back three, in a back four, but he was also playing in midfield on the number six position. But we had in that group of under 15 a lot of good midfielders, and in Switzerland I had an agreement with Anderlecht at that time that he would play the first game, because he had to go back to play youth league with under 17 as an under 15 player. So I had to fit him in the team somewhere. I made him captain, I think I remember. Mm-hmm. And I played him in the back because we at that time in under 15, and we still do it, we like to play out from the back, and he had incredible skills to play out from the back. For him, it was almost too easy in under 15. So that's why he played in the back. He did it in the club sometimes, but you already saw that he would grow to in a more higher position on the field. But at that age, when they are 14, 15, if you already focus on one position, you have to develop them a bit more in different ways so that they can learn and that they can use things like defensive, that they can develop defensive skills as a defender, that they can develop offensive skills, like, for example, as an offensive midfielder sometimes. That's why I played him in the back. I don't know if I responded to your question.
No, you did. You absolutely did. You absolutely did, yeah.
And I had another interview this morning with another paper of Liverpool, And they also mentioned me that he scored in that game, but I can't remember the goal. But now I will look it up. I will look it up, and if I find the clip, I will send it to you as well.
Yeah, perfect. Good man. Yeah, it does say that he scored. It's Transfermarkt that I got the information from. They say he played as a right back in a 4-3-3, and you had like Mario Stroikens in midfield and people like that. Yeah. He played alongside De Key, Lantaki, people like that in the defence.
I'm sure he played in the central position. I think the right back at that time was maybe Moreno.
He's on here, but he's actually down as the centre back on here.
Okay.
Yeah. But listen, you were the manager, so you're.
Yeah. I'll look it up. Yeah. I don't quite remember. It's been a long time, so.
Oh, It's up to you, I guess, where they played. So, yeah, I believe you as opposed to this website, let's put it that way. Obviously, having worked with Romeo so young, you'll have had one eye on how he's progressed from there, obviously, through the Anderlecht Academy and then Manchester City and now potentially to Liverpool as well. Have you been pleased with his development? Have you been a bit proud of seeing him grow as a player? And have you always kind of expected that he would move on to bigger things?
Yeah, of course you're proud. Of course you're happy for him, eh? Because it's his career and he has the dream to become a top player. So yeah, he's I think he's on the right steps. Can you predict this? No, I don't think you can predict this. And has he chosen the most easy pathway? I don't think so as well, because. Yeah, the easy part would have been to stay at Anderlecht, to play in the first team when he was 16 years old and made this step like Lukaku did or like Kompany did. But he chose the hard path and he stepped in quite young, at a young age, to move to England, to move to City. And then it can go two ways, or you have a success or you fail. I think he did quite well, and that makes me proud. Yeah, I think he's very impatient at sometimes. You see, he left City earlier as well. So, yeah, I think he has something in his head, and he wants to go for it. That's how he is, and he's doing quite well, I must say. So. He chose the hard part, but he's getting where he has to be and where he wants to be. So, all credits to him.
Yeah, absolutely. He certainly feels like he's driven. A couple of people have mentioned to me now he's in like a hurry. He knows where he wants to be and he's desperate to get there. And hopefully that is Liverpool. You mentioned there sort of how driven he is and how focused he is and how determined he is to be a success. And he knows, like I say, he knows what he wants to do in the game. Do you tip him from what you know of him and what you've seen of him as a youngster? Do you tip him to be a success and to sort of a move to Liverpool is a big move. And I know he's at Manchester City's academy, but the pressure at Liverpool and sort of what is expected of you in the Liverpool side is huge under Jurgen Klopp, of course. But from what you know of Romeo, do you back him to sort of take it in his stride and be a success?
Yeah, I think he will do everything to be successful there. So failing is not an option for him. So if he gets difficulties on his path, he will conquer them and he will try to prove everybody wrong. So if he gets the right support, because he's still a very young player, so if he gets the right support and if people are a bit patient with him, which is difficult in a club like Liverpool, but if it's all in the right picture, I think he will be very successful at the club or at any club he will go to.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Thanks very much to Arno for joining us there. Yes, one more chance for you guys to listen to the dulcet tones of Dan Clubb here coming up. It's the deep dive with Chris away for the day. Dan stepped in to host Josh Williams and they spoke all about Liverpool's defensive midfield, the options, including Lavia. What do they need to do? What are they going to do? Who are they going to sign? Who should they be signing? All that good stuff. So yeah, check out this week's clip from the deep dive.
Clearly, for one reason or another, this is a player Liverpool really like. This is a player Liverpool really want. Pep Linders, Jurgen Klopp, Jörg Schmadtke, all of the above want Mami Olavia to be at the football club. Now, for me personally, I've said this millions of times on different shows, the Lavia deal has made sense pretty much since day one in terms of getting him in, but it made sense in terms of getting him in as an understudy to a Fabinho before we knew or felt like Fabinho was going to leave. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the goalposts have slightly shifted in that because as things stand, Mami Olavia will be coming in likely as the six. So, discuss.
No, I think I generally agree with you. I think people are forgetting his age as well. You know, like I know he's got a full season behind him in the Premier League, which, you know, fair play to him. And he did shine as one of the better players for Southampton and things like that. But everything that people are saying about Bezetic pretty much applies to Lavia. I think the difference between the two of them, I think, is 9 months.
Yeah,
you wouldn't think that based on what people are saying. We're paying 50 million for him, don't forget. Harvey Elliott is older than Romeo Lavia is, and everyone's convinced Elliott should not be a starter this season, for example. So yeah, I think Lavia is, I'm a bit conscious, anyone who like watches my content regularly or whatever, I'm a bit conscious that I've looked a bit too cold on him. I think I'm not that cold on him. I just I would be a bit uncomfortable if he's coming in as a starter for Liverpool, just go, you know what I mean? That's a bit of a gamble, that, like.
No, I think that's fair enough. And I think it's fair enough for lots of different reasons, like you touched upon there. His age is definitely a factor in this. We have had, in Fabinho, listen, I'm very well aware of how bad he was last season, how miles off he was last season. But in seasons gone by, he's been one of the best, if not the best, in the world at that role. Although it was slightly different, obviously, in a more conventional 4-3-3. So I suppose the next question is, you touched upon it earlier in terms of if Lavia is in this system and in that role, you're more comfortable with him. Why exactly is that?
I think just for a start, his first season in the Premier League, that's what he was accustomed to. He played as part of a two-all season for Southampton. His partners varied, like Ward Prowse and things like that at times, but he's still used to playing as part of a two. If you're playing as a one, at times, you're just managing more space generally. Like, it's just a lot more of a demanding role. Like, we got Fabinho in from Monaco at the time. I think he was like peak age, wasn't he? Like 25 or something like that when we got him in. And he came from part of a two. And it took him about, I don't think he played until like late October, start of November.
Yeah, right.
And that's Fabinho, you know, an established elite player who's like international level. And I think he just won League One with Monaco. And this is a 19-year-old who's coming in, and he'd have to play as a lone player when Liverpool's press is beaten, and then when we pick up the ball and when we secure, he'd have to be making these inverted these sideways movements to accommodate Trent and stuff. So I'm just a bit conscious that you're asking quite a lot of them. When I think of these lone players who can do it on their own, I picture like someone who's really physical, fair bit of experience, quick across the ground, can manage these spaces without support almost, good reader of the game and things like that. And I think of like a Rice, to be honest, a Casado, Rodri, Busquets made up for the mobility issue just because of how intelligent he was as a player. Whereas Lavia, I don't overly see him as a true holding player who stays and just extinguishes fires that are around him and just never sweats, and you know what I mean? I see him as a bit more of a I want to go and get the ball type player. And if he's doing that there, like I said this with Steve the other week, there's this common misconception surrounding N'Golo Kante throughout his career, mainly at Chelsea, obviously, where he was viewed as a DM, a defensive midfielder, or whatever your own interpretation of a defensive midfielder is. And that's because he wins the ball a lot, goes and wins the ball a lot. But the only manager to actually play Kante there on his own was Frank Lampard. And Frank Lampard knows more about football than me, but...
Careful.
His managerial career so far is not the best.
No, I think that's fair enough, yeah. Put it mildly, yeah, go on.
And
yeah,
if you're putting Kante there, the hunter, you've got a huge space there that might need to be occupied by someone who's a bit more of a holder, like Matic, who was playing next to him when Conte was in charge and he won the league in that year. So it's a very specific profile. Listen, a lot of it, if the Fabinho goes, for me, we need to get the lad who holds. Lavia could become that, I suppose. He's only 19. But if Fabinho and Henderson both go, I would have thought we'd get Lavia and more of a holder, more of a, I will stay, you go on, you know what I mean?
Okay, well, we'll come on to those in a minute, but before we do, I know you've got some stuff you want to talk about with Lavia, some stats and stuff, but also, I suppose, what I want to ask more than anything is, I touched upon it earlier, like, clearly Liverpool feel like they want this lad. Clearly Liverpool have identified him. They've been sort of circling around this potential signing for some time now. So you've touched on some of the positives there, but what exactly is it? What is it that makes him so highly regarded? Why did he come through the Man City Academy, for instance? Why does Pep Guardiola still praise him? Why does Jurgen Klopp want him, I guess? What is it about him that makes him, if there is anything, feel free to tell me there isn't, but what is it about him that makes Arsenal be interested in him now? Chelsea, you mentioned Moises Caicedo there. They might go for Caicedo instead, but they are interested. So what is it about him that makes him so sought after?
Yeah, I think there's a few things. I think if you watch him, anyone who watches him, you can see quite quickly that he's got like the raw materials, I call it, in terms of like he can become something that's really, really good, really, if he gets anywhere near his true potential and things like that. Like, he's naturally energetic, athletic, mobile, gets across the pitch just fine and things like that. He's quite proactive in the way in which he goes and hunts the ball and regains it for you. He's quite modern when he's on in possession of the ball. Like, he's not uncomfortable when he's under pressure. He can receive the ball when there's a man coming from behind. He can get out of them tricky situations, receive the ball under pressure and get out.
Touch on that, it's one thing I think Trent in the pre-season games especially struggled with in the six. There's a couple of moments, and to be fair, one of them especially was more advanced. He found himself sort of up here. And he wasn't playing in the high, but he was playing in the six. He found himself up there. And there was a moment whereby, I think it might have been Salah, give it to him. And instantaneously, there was a press up his back and he lost the possession straight away.
Yeah.
And it's harsh because you shouldn't, but straight away you think, you can tell he's not done it a lot. You know what I mean? Straight away you can tell whether someone like Lavia, who used to play in the midfield, used to play with more bodies around him and quicker speed of thought, back to goal, that type of thing, is more used to it. Whereas Trent has spent his entire career as a right back, occasionally doing this now with a game in front of him.
Yeah,
the minute the game wasn't in front of him, someone nicked the ball off him straight away. And that was a bit of a, not a red flag, that's too far, but it did make me think, and people around me think, okay, maybe he can't be this midfielder that people have earmarked him as.
Yeah, well, it's similar with this role as well when it comes to Henderson. I think this role, you're naturally going to be receiving the ball in really confined spaces, and you're naturally going to be under pressure by a back four that's here or whatever. And I think Henderson did it to an okay level, but getting in someone like Szoboszlai to do it, and McAllister over here, and Curtis Jones over there as well, they are just much more comfortable doing it. And I think it's more of an increasingly modern trait, I think, because I think pressing as a defensive mechanism is much more common now compared to when I was watching football as a kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I was watching football as a kid, if you lost the ball, it was panic stations, get back in your block and stand there until you regain the ball again.
Yeah.
And I think nowadays, every team wants to press. It's the new buzzword, isn't it? And to have players who are press resistant and can get out of them situations and stay cool and composed, it's an attractive quality, and I think Lavia's got it. On top of that as well, I think, I don't want to go too heavy on this, but I think I'd go as far as saying I don't even think Liverpool would be going for him if he wasn't homegrown. I think I think that's a massive, massive thing with this signing in particular. And that's why Liverpool are paying 50 million for him, which is a huge amount. If you think about it now, this summer, Milner, Ox, Henderson, all going, all homegrown.
Yep.
Joe Gomez, who knows where he's going to go eventually, or if he's going to stay or whatever. Mm-hmm. Kelleher, Nat Phillips, Fabio Carvalho. Liverpool have a bit of a homegrown dilemma that's kind of bubbling behind the scenes. And on top of that, we have a midfield that is under regeneration and everyone's getting off who's been there in the past. So you need a midfielder and you need a homegrown midfielder, ideally. Mm-hmm. And Lavia is someone who would come in because of his age. I'm pretty sure I'm saying that you wouldn't have to register
him. That's right, yeah, you don't.
But when you would have to register him, he's a homegrown player.
Because he came through the City Academy.
Yeah, exactly. So it's something that you generally always see. Any homegrown player tends to go for more. It's just the way it goes. Ben mm-hmm. White went for 50, you know, whether he was worth that or not is another question. But it's just the way things tend to go. Conor Gallagher is going for like 40 or something like that.
There's definitely some added value on there.
Chelsea got a lot of money for their kind of academy graduates.
Yeah.
Trevor Chalobah was meant to be on a move at the minute.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that if Lavia wasn't homegrown, I think there's players who are maybe more ready for Liverpool now.
Okay.
Because Lavia is homegrown, he climbs above some of them on the list, I think.
I think that's fair enough, I really do. Before we move on, I want to touch on something in a minute in terms of, you mentioned a second ago about sort of getting Lavia plus a frontline potential six option. I want to touch on that. But have you got any numbers about Lavia, anything you want to touch on there, dribble-wise and stuff like that? I know you have.
Yeah.
Of course you have. You wouldn't come without.
Yeah, well, this is what's interesting, because all of the stuff I've said about Lavia, it's because I'm used to looking at Liverpool signings, Liverpool transfer links or whatever, checking the numbers and immediately seeing where the lad shines. He's usually an outlier in something. Mm-hmm. Lavia, if you look at him, is okay, but he's not grabbing the spotlight, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll show you the graphic now. So this is the first one. This is scatterplot, as you can see. And on one axis, we've got tackles and interceptions per 90. And on the other axis, we've got successful dribbles per 90. And I've picked them two because they are, if you watch a compilation of them, he looks like a ball winner and he looks like a dribbler. Yeah. So there is two most prominent areas, if you like. This is midfielders only, like you're seeing. Premier League last season, and everyone there has played a minimum of 900 minutes. And there's some forwards in there. I could have spent hours getting them out, but I just left them in there for the sake of it. If you can't see Lavia, he's kind of about four interceptions and tackles per 90 and about one and a bit dribbles per 90 around Rodrigo, Benson Kerr, Declan Rice. The lad who's kind of overlapping Lavia there is James Milner.
Okay.
Now, what I'm trying to get at here is that is kind of Lavia's, that's where Lavia shines the most. And even still, he's kind of not really. I mean, you got Conor Gallagher, you got Joe Linton.
It's not a steam company, is it?
Not really. I mean, it's not bad, don't get me wrong. I mean, the lad's 19.
Yeah.
And he played for the worst team in the league.
Yeah.
So he would probably receive some sort of boost across his numbers in some capacity if he played for Liverpool compared to Southampton. But just looking at kind of the numbers that he posts, it's not like leap out the page, obvious. Like, say, for example, a couple of months back, I recorded a show on Ugarte.
Mm-hmm.
His ball-winning numbers, which you have to be careful with, obviously, because they're just defensive numbers generally aren't really particularly reliable. But mm-hmm. Ugarte's ball-winning numbers were off the scale.
Mm-hmm.
Palinha's ball-winning numbers are off the scale in Premier League terms. I think he finished top of the league. Casemiro was right up there. Lavia is painted as a ball-winner, but he wins the ball less than Jack Colbach, per 90. So it's not. I don't want to see.
No, it's fair.
Cold, you see what I mean?
Numbers are numbers, aren't they? End of the day.
Yeah.
But do you think then? Do you think?
But these contacts lacking there. Obviously, I'm just comparing them to what I would usually see. I'd usually look at them, and go, "Okay, I see it. Yeah,
makes sense.
I can see that. Yeah,
this doesn't make as much sense."
And if you look at his StatsBomb radar, now bear in mind, bear with me on this one.
Go on.
So we don't need to provide too much analysis on this one because it's quite detailed for someone who's just seen it for the first time probably. But what that is that's Lavia compared to his midfield peers, I think, in the Premier League only, based on the season just gone, for like fouls won, successful dribbles, deep progressions, passing accuracy and all that stuff. And as you can see, in no department is he like top bracket. Mm-hmm. He wins a lot of fouls, for example, compared to his midfield peers, because he's kind of close to the outer, mm-hmm. the outer of the circle there. Turnovers and keeping the ball. But other than that, say, for example, pressure regains, he's not particularly looking like a pressing monster really or anything like that. Obviously not assisting goals and things we expect, that's normal. Possession adjusted interceptions, you'd maybe expect it to be a little bit higher, but this is kind of what I'm painting in terms of like, as a data thing, he's not like leaping off the page, but that doesn't mean he can't, and that doesn't mean he won't or anything like that. Mm. That's just seeing what he's done so far and asking questions about it.
No, I think that's absolutely fair enough. Yeah, do you think perhaps Liverpool, you touched on it as you were talking about sort of Southampton not being, you know, particularly fluent in possession and not keeping the ball loads, because as you mentioned, they were one of the worst teams in the Premier League last season. They got beat most weeks. So do you think maybe Liverpool have identified him and sort of said, well, in a side that has more of the ball, that dominates more football matches, we know we'll extrapolate this, and this out of him. Do you think that's the approach we're going with? Because you're the data guy, but and you know how data-driven Liverpool are. So clearly there must be something in it, something they've seen in him that suggests that what he does have, when transformed into a side that, like I say, is a better football team, quite frankly, he'll be able to excel at that point.
Yeah, well, that's generally what the idea of the whole data analysis is, really. The idea is you pick up on these players who are posting decent numbers for a team beneath Liverpool in the football and food chain, mm-hmm. and you look at them and kind of assess, and I can't do this, this is above my pay grade, this, but that you kind of assess and forecast what their output will look like in a Liverpool unit, and it should naturally receive a boost. Jota is a very good example of that. Nunes is another good example, in his final season for Benfica, Nunes was averaging about 3.7 shots per 90 for Benfica. You put him in Liverpool in his first season, he's averaging 4.5 shots. So you put him in a better attacking team, he's now getting more chances. Shock. You know what I mean? So if you put Lavi in a better organised team, maybe in... Give him situations that he'll be able to anticipate more because the team's better, things like that. Maybe he'll regain the ball more for you and things like that. So it's all about just kind of forecasting like what putting him in Liverpool will do to his own performances and Liverpool's performances.
Right, that is enough, Dan Clubb. Even I'm a bit fed up of hearing him now, if truth be told. That's too much, Dan. Maybe. He's been on literally every single clip so far. So for the last one, I'm cutting him out and I'm giving you the dulcet tones of me instead. Yes, it was Jano Inside Time with me hosting the amazing Neil Jones as ever. And surprise, surprise, the hot topic was Romeo Lavia. How does he fit into Liverpool? How's this deal come about? All that kind of stuff. So yeah, here is a clip of this week's Jano Insight. Let's talk about a potential incoming then. So I enjoyed the Discord question from Jono to start this one off. It was wherefore art thou Romeo, which is brilliant. So yeah, David Ornstein's reporting yesterday afternoon was that Liverpool are set to return with an improved offer from Romeo Lavia. Southampton rejected one that was approximately £37 million, as they're seeking approximately £50 million. There's a high chance this deal gets done, although Chelsea retain firm interest. To clarify, that was David Ornstein and James Pearce's joint reporting there.
Yeah.
I think by all accounts, now everyone's got wind of what's going on here. Liverpool went Southampton, got told no, they're going to come back. We've spoken a while about Lavia, Neil. His name cropped up a few months ago, really, and I think the main talking was, good player, good young player. The fee might be a bit too high. It feels like Liverpool are going to have to get somewhere close. They might not get to 50, but they're going to have to certainly going to go into the 40s. Yeah. So, they must really like him. Like, really, really like him. Because I was always thinking for a while, did they sign Lavia and he's like a bit of a development project? But if you're spending £40 million on someone, he could still be that, but they might like him perhaps more than we even thought he did, if that makes sense.
Yeah, possibly. Or, I mean, the other thing is the landscape shifted, hasn't it? So they need a player.
Yeah, a bit desperate.
A bit more. So maybe there is an element of, look, don't stop sort of nitpicking over £3 or £4 million. Just pay it, you know.
Yeah.
I also think, again, to go back to James's question about Declan Rice, Moises, Caicedo, this is a player with a big upside, isn't he? You know, he's 19, so, you know, you could sort of make a case that even if he's underwhelming, you're still probably going to get a fair chunk of that back if you were to sell him in 2 years' time. You know, something would have to go terribly wrong for him to be completely worthless in that period. I don't think his wages will be massive, you know, in terms of a midfielder. He won't be in the same ballpark as Fabinho, Declan Rice, Caicedo. You know, he won't be earning that much money. So the financials are a little bit more sort of workable around this. I think the interesting point, and we talked about it on a show recently, didn't we? We talked about there were so many names that were sort of stacked up, and it was like, well, who's the name you'd go for? And I think the question I had with Lavia is, if he's the one that you think can become Fabinho's successor, do it now. You know, do it now then, because, you know, that's how you know if he can swim. So I think it's interesting that Liverpool have gone down this route. Clearly they've settled on that, and there might be an element of they've looked around what else there is and thought, well, you know, what Calvin Phillips, we're not going to do that. Maybe they've decided, look, it's a bit of a gamble, we'll roll the dice on this young lad. Or like you say, it might just be that he's the one that we just think he's brilliant. Be interesting to see. I think they'll end up around what. I think you're going to be looking at mid-40s in a deal. I don't think it'll be... I'm sure Southampton will be worked down a little bit from 50 and Liverpool will work a little bit up from 40, and we'll see them meet in the middle. I suppose the question, the last words of David Ornstein's tweet is Chelsea retain firm interest, so it just remains to be seen whether they turn that into something else. But it sounds pretty positive from a Liverpool perspective. I think there was reports that Lavia himself had given the sort of... the okay that he wants to join Liverpool. He played the other night, didn't he? He played 45 minutes for Southampton. He played Bournemouth. Yep. So, I mean, that's another bonus, by the way. I know I got a couple of texts of people saying, what's he doing playing? But good, actually, isn't it? You know, it means he's fit, and it means he's got some rhythm behind him. It's not a case of coming in, you know. For example, Fabinho. Okay, he's going to Saudi, so it might not be as pronounced, but he's going there with, you know, couple of weeks missed of his pre-season, isn't he? You know, maybe a bit of catching up to do fitness-wise. Lavia looks like he's in the rhythm, at least. So, it looks pretty positive on this front. And I'm now fascinated to see what Liverpool do. And, you know, listen, there's a question there, isn't there? I think it's probably worth answering this question from Ashley.
Yeah.
If the Lavia deal goes ahead, what do you think would be the next priority? A senior central defensive midfield type or a centre-back? That's the big question now for Liverpool, isn't it? I think a midfielder, personally. I think just a little bit more security around that area. There's another position you could put in there as a right back, isn't it?
Yeah,
it could be a right back.
Yeah,
you know, the Liverpool looked at two and say, well, Alexander Arnold's going in there, and he's done quite well, I think, in the two friendlies I've seen. You know, he's not a perfect number six. He's not, you know, he's clearly got things to learn, and he's got weaknesses that maybe would show up. But he's done all right, and he's not a bad footballer to have in there, is he? So if that is the next step that Liverpool do, and say, actually, Alexander-Arnold and Lavia, two deep midfielders, and then we work around it, it could be a right-back that they look at. It could be a right-sided centre-back. It could be a left-sided centre-back. I personally would go for a midfielder that's a little bit a reliable, experienced midfielder that you think you're happy to have him start Premier League games. You can dip him in and out. You can maybe, you know, use him on his own, or you can use him in a two. So it might not be necessarily a number six specialist, but it might be someone who can play there. So I would probably still stick with the midfield, because I think that's going to be the area that is going to have the biggest influence on Liverpool this season.
Yeah, I agree. I'd actually go.
Go for both.
Well, I'd like.
And I understand the centre back issue, and I think probably there's been alarm bells rung with. Probably certainly the greater fourth game on Monday. I think there was a lot of alarm bells around Matip, wasn't there?
Yes.
And Joe Gomez potentially. I mean, I actually thought Gomez played all right.
He was at right back. As well.
Yeah, but the fact that he's at right back, does that tell you something about where he's at? So I understand that concern around him. I think Canate's looked pretty good in the two games I've seen. Virgil. But yeah, I can see why there'd be that sort of potential light shone on a centre back, but I'd still be looking at, you're losing five midfielders from your squad,
this summer, aren't you? Potentially with Fabinho, Keita, Ox, Milner, Henderson. Yeah, five midfielders, potentially Thiago. I'd still be looking at, I'd fill in that space with one more.
Yeah, absolutely. Sasha Tavolieri, Belgian journalist, by the way, we had him on the show the other day after the
Yeah,
the,
I saw that.
Yeah, and he's a good guy. Sasha, he's reported this morning Liverpool have actually made that second bid now. £45 million deal up to bonuses included. The work is now ongoing to find the right structure with talks to ensure that bonuses are achievable. So instalments are now being discussed. Southampton expected to get the deal done in the next few days. The player's just waiting to go so he can join up with Liverpool in Singapore. Matter of time. So that's the latest on it. And it does feel like, I don't know, I am with you. I wonder if Liverpool liked them, but they've been given a hurry up because of the Fabinho Henderson thing. If again, necessity, you know, and things like that. And also, I'm fascinated. I'm with you. I would feel a bit more comfortable with a more senior defensive midfielder in the team, Neil. But Jürgen Schoene, he'll put faith in young players. Yeah. Trent Alexander-Arnold played every game pretty much as soon as he was in the team. Harvey Elliott was in Liverpool's 11 the day he come back from Blackburn, until he got a horrendous injury.
By
Cetic done the same things. He's happy to do it. Again, we're sitting here thinking it's going to be Lavia and someone else. To someone else might be by Cetic, and he might just go, listen, I've got two young 19-year-old lads who have both got issues of playing like loads of games on the run, but if we go half with both of them, I'm completely fine with that. That is potentially on the table here, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Look, I think the worry everyone rightly has connected with Liverpool is when it goes well, that's fine. But what? Two of the last three seasons, Liverpool have taken a gamble of that ilk. They took a gamble in the pandemic season by having only three special centre-backs to let Dejan Lovren go, and he didn't replace him. And they went, we'll have three centre-backs and we'll have Fabinho as a fourth. And lo and behold, all of them were injured. Last summer, they didn't get Tchouaméni. And they said, no, well, we can get through. And if it goes well, no one says a word. Everyone goes, brilliant, what a season Keita had. Well, Oxlade-Chamberlain, you know, 15 goals from midfield. You know, that's fine. But the weight of evidence is that it's more likely to go wrong than it is to go right, or that Liverpool are as likely to find themselves in the... So that's all well and good to say, yeah, we'll trust these two 19-year-olds, but there's absolutely a question mark over... There's a question mark over both of them. They've played 50-odd games between them in their career. There's at least a question mark over how consistent they can be, and there's probably a question mark about how good they actually are going to be, because we haven't got a greater body of evidence yet. We haven't seen them play in that position where, you know, in Lavia's case, we haven't seen them where it's like, right, you know, you've drawn a home game, you can't do that. You know, now the pressure's on you. You gave a ball away on the last day of the season. This doesn't matter. They're relegated, and it doesn't, you know. It was a bit of fun that last game. Give a ball away in his own penalty area. If he does that at Liverpool, then the pressure comes, and then all of a sudden, you find out a little bit about his character. Does he go into his shell? Does he try that anymore? Does he become, you know? He hasn't answered those questions yet. He's still got to, and that's fine. You know, there's a good chance that he answers them emphatically and becomes a fine player. He looks like he's got the talent to do that. By Chet, it's the same. You know, for all that there was huge promise, and I'm one of his biggest champions and have been his biggest champions, he came into a side where it couldn't get much worse. And so there's a general sort of upbeat feeling about him because, oh, well, he's not what we've been seeing in the last few weeks, but it's been terrible. Now, when there's a bit of expectation on how does he cope, you know, do people start suddenly going, well, yeah, he's okay, but he's not quite ready yet. You know, he's going to have ups and downs. He's recovering from an injury. So I understand if everything goes perfectly according to plan, Liverpool could have two absolute gems in their midfield and two 19-year-olds, and you go, wow, the future is in good hands, absolutely fine. But you have to have that nagging doubt in your mind where you say, we could end up in the same position as last year where, you know, all the options or too many of the options look imperfect or they're injured, or we could be in that position where, you know, we should have done one more. We should have actually got one more centre back, one more defensive midfielder in. That's why I would be on the camp of get another one in and sandbag a little bit. And, you know, even if it's a player that you don't think is world class, you don't think he's going to be the best player in the team, you don't even think he's going to be
a guaranteed starter. Get him in so that in certain games you can play him. If there's an injury, you can put him in and you know what you're going to get from him. That would be my preference for Liverpool in the next few weeks. And listen, that's just me giving an opinion. It's easy for me to sit and say, get another one in. Who? But that would be what I would expect or want Liverpool to do.
It does feel like, going back to the Lavia deal in itself, rather than what I mean, it does feel like this is one that's probably going to get done, you would think. It feels like all signs are pointing towards that as well.
Liverpool don't tend to make bids for players that they don't feel like they're going to get. You know, we've had a lot of players on this show talked about interest and but Liverpool didn't make moves for them. We didn't hear Mason Mount bids, did we? Or Kevin Turam, or, you know, these other players, Ryan Gravenberch. We heard about talks and potential interest. These are offers, you know, that suggest Liverpool think that there's a good chance that A, the player's going to come, and B, that Southampton are going to sell.
Yeah, it does, yeah. It could be one that moves pretty quickly. Like I say, the fact that they're flying out to Singapore is probably another reason. I'm guessing everyone involved with one of us, as much of that tour as you can get.
I mean, look, it's just over 2 weeks till the Premier League season starts. I mean, a great story there. There's Chelsea, the first game, isn't it? Potentially, you know, that I don't want to think about the idea that he might line up against Liverpool on the first day, but the clock's ticking. You know, they need to have their squad in order as quickly as they can. And yeah, the Singapore tour, obviously. I can think of some players who've sort of flown into tours. I think Shaqiri was one. I remember him turning up. I actually remember him arriving at the hotel in East Rutherford and being mobbed. I can remember, who was the player in Singapore? Was it Xabi Alonso, possibly, in the past? So, yeah, he would get a good introduction to life at Liverpool if he was to fly over mid-tour and experience that, you know, mania of Liverpool fans in the Far East. That might be a nice little introduction for him.
No, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll keep an eye on the Lavia stuff. Like I say, I'm sure more will develop as soon as it does. And I imagine it'll be pretty quickly as well. So we've got you covered yet. Right then, thanks very much to Neil for joining us for that one. And thanks very much for you guys for listening to this episode of Red Men Weekly. Like I did say at the top of the show, if you want to check out these entire shows, even in video or podcast forms, redmenplus.com. Go and sign up, go and subscribe, go and support everything we do here at Red Men HQ. Allows us to bring all these free shows to you as well and get you some amazing Liverpool content. That wasn't even everything we put on Red Men Plus this week, and that's already the amount of content you'll get each and every week. So yeah, really, really encourage you guys to get over there and support us as well. And by the way, if you haven't noticed already, if you go to redmenmerch.com, our latest book, Bobby Firmino, The Best in the World, is now available for you guys to buy. It's made, it's signed, it's created, it's all there, it's done, it's ready to go. So yeah, go and get yourselves an amazing piece of Liverpool memorabilia, looking back on the career of an absolute Liverpool superstar, Roberto Firmino. So yeah, redmenmerch.com for that one, redmenplus.com for all your content needs. We'll be back with another Red Men Weekly next week. See you in a bit.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.